The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today on Quick Slants, the podcast, kicking through the rubble of a 23-7 win. Have the Patriots turned a corner? Meanwhile, Relentless, the Julian Edelman memoir that I collaborated with him on, drops today. Some insight and some behind-the-scenes making of that particular sausage and mayo. Talking about disgruntled players all over the NFL. All that and more on Quick Slants, the podcast. Hey, Philly Phil.
Big day, Tom. Big
yeah,
big day.
Yeah, it's great. I've never written a book before. Had a chance to write a book. Going to have to parachute out of this podcast at some point because I got to get out to Westboro where we're having an event, Julian and I, and hopefully glean some insight. Actually, I've already gleaned some insight, so I'm gonna share it now. Spoke to him last night.
Julian Edelman, you spoke
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and, you know, we had to plan for this. He asked me not to go into chapter and verse on the information surrounding his ACL. Suffice it to say, he hopes to be ready for off-season conditioning.
There you go.
So he wants to be able to get back on it. Very fired
That's
up. He
news.
Was more upbeat than I anticipated him being. Perhaps it's the release of this memoir. He's very excited to know what the feedback is. He's always excited to know what the feedback is. He's like, anybody read it yet? Anybody read it? What do they think? Yeah, it's good. It's good.
He's invested.
He is invested.
That's good.
And well, he was invested
enough
in
time.
The book.
I was going to say, he spent enough time with you. He should be.
We busted ass on that thing.
Sure did.
But he's competing with Derek Rivers to see who heals first. Julian had his done 4 weeks ago. Dr. Andrews, Dr. Elitrash, consulted with Dr. Peter Ains, who Julian has worked with in the past. So the ACL was repaired. A couple other little things, which also went on that play. And he said to me, you know, I felt so good. It's almost like I got overconfident on that play. I had eaten right. I had been in terrific condition all summer. I felt like we were playing in that game. We hadn't done a lot against Houston. We didn't really play the first week against – who did they play the first week?
Preseason?
Yeah.
Jacksonville.
He said that was all. He said, I felt good at the end of that week against Jacksonville. Get into Detroit and it was a fast field. And he goes, you know, usually I break down a little bit more before I make that move. He said, I tried to do that one at full speed. He goes, I don't know. I just felt that good. And that's not something I normally do.
Mm.
So, already has his sights set on comeback player.
And now it's him and Derek Rivers behind the scenes going at it. It's funny. We've seen a lot of Derek Rivers in the locker room. In terms of doing some training. Right now, it's just upper body stuff. Mm-hmm. Hasn't really done a whole lot in terms of lower body. Actually had a little procedure on the right knee to fix the left one. Take a graft from the right knee to fix the left. And so he's not really doing anything lower body, but he feels good. He's walking around without a hitch.
He
think
could
the outlook
really,
is probably pretty good for him, too.
Boy, he could add a lot, too, but just based upon what he did in the short period of time. But it was interesting what Edelman said just on ACLs in general. They waited about 4 weeks for the injury and the swelling to subside because if you have the surgery prior to the swelling subsiding, you may not get your mobility back. So he's like, so after 2 or 3 weeks, I was actually able to walk on it fairly easily. It just didn't have lateral stability. But I was able to build up the quad and build up the flexibility back to where it was prior to the surgery, because if you could just go directly to have the surgery,
interesting,
you can lose the flexibility. So, but he's very optimistic.
So that's good. That's good news.
You know, one of the things, we're gonna have an excerpt on the website later this week. But one of the interesting things in doing the book was when I talked to him, just how downcast he was going into the 2016 season as he came back from the foot injuries. He's had two foot injuries. He's had the ACL. He's had the wrist, forearm injuries. So, you know, I had no idea, Phil, how much he kind of stared into the abyss of his football mortality and how many times he has, whether it was middle school, high school, college, NFL. There's been multiple times at which he's been up against it and had to kind of soldier through and figure out a way.
And I know your book because I've had a chance to look at it. Got a little bit of a preview look. You go deep with him, or he goes deep on a lot of those topics. And so suffice it to say that everybody listening to this podcast needs to go buy the book
right
now. Yeah,
you're going to like it.
And just get every detail. And where can they get it?
You can get it on Amazon. Relentless is the name of the book. You can get that on Amazon. You'll also be able to get it select bookstores. I don't even actually know if it's select bookstores. Probably all kinds of bookstores. It's Hatchet Publishing. Kind of a big publishing joint.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm psyched about that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep you up to date on signings. And you know what?
Yeah, have to
You know
what
we should do, Phil?
What should we do?
Maybe we should pod from a signing one time. You and I could go to a signing. We could do some of the books, and we could shoot the shit with the people.
I think that's a great idea.
42-minute club? We can't do that anymore.
Why not?
Well, 30-minute.
Well, now it's just more. It's a more exclusive club now.
Ooh, people grandfathered in.
Exactly. People have been waiting for that.
What was the key to the Patriots' win against Atlanta on Sunday? Was it third down? Defensively? Was it third down offensively? Was it secondary communication? Was it Atlanta? I have a feeling, and I have something that isn't that novel a point, but I want to hear what you think first.
Can you ball all those things together? And I would lump in, and I might put this at the top of the list. I just thought the offensive line play was so much better this week than it had been in weeks prior, and it allowed the running game to get going. It allowed Tom Brady to be a little bit better protected. It opened up some of the play-action passing game we saw later. Chris Hogan had, I think, the longest catch of the day for the Patriots on a play-action pass because they were able to establish the run. You got all four running backs worked in. They all contributed. I thought for the line, this was really – they played well against the Jets, but I feel like this might be the game where they look back and they say, okay, that's really where the foundation was laid for us to move forward for the rest of the season.
And that's mine, too. Mine is the running game.
Look at that. Just a couple of guys on the same freaking page.
Because everything feeds off of that, but that offense can't do what it did if it's chasing right out of the chutes. So the fact that they got off the field on the first third down, the fact that they got ahead in the football game, which is something that they haven't been able to do with regularity, and even then hadn't been able to hold leads, up 17-7 on Kansas City. You know, the four backs had 36 touches between them. Between catches and carries. I think the low guy was Burkhead with 7 touches. High guy was Lewis with 14. That to me is what Bill Belichick is zinging with to the zang of the defenses, which keep getting skinnier and faster and have more defensive backs. You know what? You guys want to do that? How about I get a running back for every single type of scenario. Oh, and while I'm at it, how about I bring a fullback? Huh? How about I use a fullback and make you guys think Bronco Nagurski just came back reincarnated? You want that?
That was the James Devlin train just checking in right there.
Yep.
I'm with you. And we talked about it back in the offseason when they made that investment in that position, a position that not many other teams have been willing to make across the league. Just look at how many teams are spending money on running backs. And yes, if you're a certain kind of athlete, you deserve to be taken in the top 10, your Ezekiel Elliott's, your Leonard Fournette's, those types of guys. But otherwise, it's a position that teams are trying to skimp on.
It's like, I look at TJ Yeldon. I think he was a first-round pick at Jacksonville.
Was he? Jeez.
I think so. And after 15 minutes watching him, he runs completely upright, like a cock, like a rooster. Like
gotcha, sure.
That kind of cock.
Okay.
Like, you know, upright, head back. Mm-hmm. That should be rooster, not cock. Sorry, folks. And they had to turn around the next year and get Leonard Fournette. Modal?
TJ Yeldon, a second-round pick, but a high second-round pick, 36 overall.
Okay. I love when Phil proofreads me like that. But gotcha. He's doing it in a pleasant way. Gotcha. Sometimes if we were by ourselves and didn't have the mics,
just bothers me.
He would make a face, and he actually can hear him angrily pounding on his keys to try and
figure out. We've got Draftniks, you know, listening to this podcast. They're yelling at their phones right now.
How can you not know?
Second round. TJ was a second rounder.
Why am I listening to somebody who I know more than?
Fournette was drafted in 2017, Tom, not 2016.
Did I say 16? Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Sorry about that, folks.
We're both on the same page there. And listen, I think a lot of people were concerned when they let LeGarrette Blount go, and LeGarrette Blount is having a good season in Philadelphia. But the outlook at the running back position is okay right now.
And Deion Lewis has turned it on. There's just no diversity to LeGarrette back there. Every single one of these guys has at least the threat of going out to the side and catching the ball. And with LeGarrette, yeah, he can catch it. But it's restarting that friggin' battleship after he catches it. Sorry, Phil.
He's been good. He, I believe, is leading the league in yards after contact per carry. You know who number two is? Deion Lewis. Mm. He had one play this past week where he was sandwiched by Dontari Poe and another Falcons defensive lineman, about 500 pounds of human bearing down on him. More, probably closer to six. And just bounced forward 13 yards. That was actually the last legitimate play from scrimmage that the Patriots had. Iced the game. But that's the kind of guy he is. He's not just that little water bug who's avoiding tackles in the backfield. He can take a little bit of punishment and keep on chugging himself.
Really huge juncture in that game the other night, too, was his 25-yard run, which followed the 20-yard catch by Hogan on the 3rd and 16. That, to me, when they picked those two up and they propelled themselves down the field. I can't remember if that ended with a field goal or a touchdown that drive. But that was just a huge juncture because I think that what you said about the offensive line, I'm concentrating on really looking at what the running backs are doing. You're talking about the offensive line, but it had to really boost the confidence of the group to be able to hit both of those. And the time that Brady will have, because people will be frozen a little bit by play action, is huge.
Do you think Rex Burke had a little bit of juice the other night?
Oh, yeah.
I thought he looked fast.
Fast. Laterally
really
quick.
Really good vision, just going back for the report card and looking at it a little more closely. There are a couple plays where he probably should have been bottled up, but read it, found a block, used some leverage in a way that you might not have expected, and squirted ahead for 9 yards. I think there was one drive. They really only used him as the main back for one series. But I thought he looked pretty. He had 3 9-yard runs.
Did he really?
In one series. So and he caught one for 11, I believe. And he played special teams. He had two special teams tackles. Guy was all over the field. I mean, if he could stay healthy and give them this consistently, even if it's just one or two series every week, that's the kind of player Bill Belichick loves. He contributes in the kicking game. He's productive when he's out there. He's just got to stay healthy.
That's exactly what they have in mind, I think, for this offense going forward. And they have to change their personality, and a lot of it keys back on the defense. If the defense can stop people, if the defense can keep the game close, if the defense can withstand a running game or a ball control offense that sometimes might not move around, because you're going to have stuffs where you end up in 2nd and 11, and then you're incomplete and it's 3rd and 11, and then you're punting. So the defense has to play like it did the other day. I'm going to call it 20 because we got to get out there.
Let's do it.
And do slants, and I'm going to let you guys follow up, folks. I am going to probably punch out, and Phil's going to wrap this up with Mayo after this break, and I'll be back on Thursday.
All right, we're back. Tom's gone. He is out being an author. He's out putting on some kind of performance with Julian Edelman to celebrate the release of Relentless, which you all have now purchased on Amazon.com during that audio little break book we just had there. And here's Gerard. We got Gerard Mayo on the phone today.
Audiobooks. I'm in traffic right now. It's all about the audiobook in traffic.
So I heard a rumor you were actually going to be voicing over the audiobook for Relentless. Can you confirm?
I'm going to voice over. I'm gonna do the voiceover and my best Dave Chappelle voice.
It's about 240 pages of Gerard going Dave Chappelle just yelling into a microphone.
Exactly.
If that doesn't sell books, I don't know what will.
Exactly. I sprinkle in a little Samuel L. Jackson.
Do you got some of that? Also a little George Clooney.
Don't think they all have to be black men. I could sound white as well.
Did you just throw on a little white guy there at the end of that?
Yeah, I did.
I could tell.
No, I didn't. That was my regular voice. Now you've crossed the line.
No, it feels like when you do impressions of me or Tom, you just make them into like generic geeky guys.
No, I don't. Seriously, I'm a geek at heart. Honestly,
I know,
I
that is true.
I got a Celestron AS telescope for Christmas last year. I'm a geek. It's cool.
Yo, did you see that asteroid that buzzed us the other day?
No, I didn't. I think we had a little
mini scare. You have a job. Well, congratulations to you. Hey, part of your job is to help us break down the X's and O's of what happened on the weekend prior. And I wanted to ask you about one play in particular. And I did get a chance to ask Bill Belichick about this on the conference call. And he was pretty good, pretty detailed. But I need a little more insight from you because Kyle Van Noy came through with a big-time fourth down stop at the goal line. And it sounds like what he did on that play to blow up the Taylor Gabriel jet sweep was not exactly written into that situation, but he just kind of saw something and reacted and used his instincts. What did you see from that play? Because that obviously was one of the big plays of the game.
Yeah, you know, the thing about a play like that, especially when you see a guy like Gabriel, you know, doing this fast motion, I mean, honestly, he's probably not going to make the A-gap or the quarterback sneak or any play like that, right? And all of a sudden you see a guy who, you know, you see him fast motion across and you see the guy covering him who doesn't have a chance, right? Because he's trying to get around the linebackers and get around everyone. He just made a heck of a play, right? He saw the speed sweep. He was fortunate enough that they handed the ball off to the guy, to Gabriel. So he was able to make that play. If they ran, you know, the thing about it, I felt like, you know, Atlanta, as far as the offensive game plan, was terrible. You know, they came into the game and they were like, you know, we're better than these guys. We just ran out of gas, right? That's how I felt, you know, watching the game. I felt like, you know, there was really no, creativity, and, you know, with the formations, there was no... you didn't see bunches. You didn't see stack formations. And, you know, you didn't see any of that. It pretty much was like, hey, you know what, guys? We averaged 7.5 yards a carry in the Super Bowl, wherever it ended up being. You know, and we averaged 7 yards a carry. You know, guys, we scored 28 points fairly easy. And we just have to play 4 quarters, and then we'll be okay, right? So we're just better than these guys, no matter what. Forget the X's and O's. You know, what's the old saying? It's not the X's and the O's, it's the Jimmys and the Joes. Well, that's an old school saying.
Yeah, that sounds like something Bill might say. That sounds like something you might have picked up from him. But, Gerard, let me ask you this then. Do you feel like what happened against the Falcons for this Patriots defense, you know, we're all talking about how this is, you know, okay, now they're starting to finally find it, and you know, maybe Johnson Batamosi is the answer at cornerback. But it sounds like to me that, you know, you're putting as much of what happened on the inability of the Falcons to do anything offensively as you are giving credit to the Patriots defense. So which is it? Are there still some major questions to be answered defensively for the Patriots?
I think so, and I think you hit it on the head. I think it's a combination of the two. I think it's, you know, some of these offensive coordinators, I'm like, you know, what are you doing? But also the defense is playing better, right? As far, and you've heard every talking head, including myself, talk about communication. And I think having Hightower at that second level, even though it does take away from the pass rush, right? Because no longer are the days where you could put the lineup 4 guys. I was watching the Eagles game the other day. They lined up 4 guys, and they were rotating these guys, and they were able to get pressure. But you can't do that when you don't have Hightower up there. Not at this time, right? You have some guys that can rush the passer, like Trey Flowers and even Malcolm, right? He can rush the passer. But you just don't have a group of 4 guys that can really do that. So, but back to your point, I think, you know, these offensive coordinators are having a tough time, but also the defense, they're communicating better. They're playing better. Their confidence is through the roof right now, right? And their red zone defense has been the game changer the last 3 weeks. So when you look at this red zone defense, when opponents are in the red zone, they're walking away with a field goal at most, for the most part, right? And this has been like the last three, you know, the last three games.
And sometimes they're missing those.
And they're missing field goals. They're blocking field goals. You know, they're really tightening down. And to go back to the original, you know, play, you know, the speed sweep. People have to remember, if you really want to get into football, you know, it's easy to game like these chunk plays because you can run 15-yard in routes, or you can run a 18-yard comeback when you're in the middle of the field, like between the 20s, right? As soon as you get inside the 20s, now you don't have as much too high safety coverage, right? You know, I'll say too high safety coverage. That's kind of how Batamosi has been playing. He's been having to be over the top, and he's been able to undercut. But now, essentially, in the red zone, everything happens quicker. The safeties are closer to the line of scrimmage. So now, essentially, it's like, you know, it's like 8 men in the box, right? 8 9. It's like, you know, everything is tighter. So that's in the run game. And then the pass game, now instead of running cover 5, which essentially is 2 men, you're running cover 7. And in cover 7, you have about 10 calls that you can handle different situations with. But essentially, it's 2 double teams. So now your safeties aren't just hanging up high, because there are no 20-yard or 30-yard post routes, right? Mm-hmm. Now these guys are doubling teams. You know, they're doubling guys like Gronk or like, you know, some of these good pass catchers. I didn't mean to get too deep.
No, I love that. I love that. Cover 7 is something that I think we're all going to have to look up now, because although you explained it, a couple double teams. Boom. We'll just leave it at that for the people.
Yeah, it is double teams, but it also, even, you know, because this is a longitudinal podcast, you got to go back a couple. You have to go back and kind of get the whole, you know, when the Patriots were having a hard time with stacks and bunches and things like that. But in cover 7, you also have tools to handle the box, right? So the box is 4-on-3, essentially. That handles some of these bunch concepts. Like, first, that's like, if this guy runs an in route, this guy has him. If he runs out, this guy has him. Vertical, this guy. So it just essentially, these are essentially zone concepts built in demand.
And I think it gets back to some of the stuff we were talking about, I believe, week 2, when the Patriots had some trouble near the goal line against the Saints. I think we were talking cover 7 that week, because they were doubling Mike Thomas, and then on the other side they were running some pick routes, and the Patriots had to try to figure those out. Gerard, I want to ask you, because you mentioned Johnson Batamosi. He's played well. He's had some help. He's been a sure tackler. We know Stephon Gilmore has been up and down. I think, unfortunately for Gilmore, he had his best game of the year and then has been out for with a concussion the last couple of days last couple of weeks. If Gilmore's healthy, do you keep Batamosi out there?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think you have to sprinkle Gilmore back in, because now that the confidence is sky high, then there's no doubt about it that Gilmore is a better cornerback than Batamosi. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Look at that.
Gilmore is a better cornerback
than
Batamosi.
We're breaking all kinds of news on the podcast today.
We are. It's like, hey, Captain Obvious, thanks for the insight. That's what they're telling me, right? Yeah. But listen, my thing with, you know, Gilmore, you know, he was in a different situation, though, right? They weren't really topping. When I say topping, they really weren't, you know, shooting safeties over the top, allowing this guy to play underneath. And the Patriots defense and Bill and Matty P, they've been doing this for a long time. They've had corners who they really didn't have that long speed. Think about a guy like Logan Ryan, right? Think about a guy, you know, think about guys like that. They didn't have that long speed, but they were quick and they were shifty and they were able to read routes and stand underneath a lot. And so essentially, and it's called cat coverage as well, right? Asante Samuel had led the league in interceptions a couple of years. I think it was like back-to-back years, because he was playing this cat coverage and he was able to undercut the 10-yard out or the 10-yard in or whatever it is, right? These slant routes. He's able to really play aggressive because he knows that this guy hits me with a double move, I have safeties behind me. And the Patriots are fortunate that they have great safeties. Safeties that can cover a lot of field. Deron Harmon, Devin McCourty, all those guys can cover field, and that's like a comforting feeling for a guy like Malcolm or Batamosi or Gilmore to know that if the quarterback doesn't throw this ball on a dime, then they have the potential to pick him up.
Should they just be doing more of that with Gilmore then? Because I think, like you said, you know, they're trying to protect Batamosi maybe in some ways. But when Gilmore comes back, should they just be doing more of these cat coverages with Gilmore just to allow him to have some more help? Are they asking too much of him?
So the cat coverage or the high safety, it's really a dual-edged sword, right? It's good against people who, you know, have one or two solid receivers. But now all of a sudden you go against teams like, let's go back to week one, where you have a guy like Tyreek Hill, where you have to top this guy because he's the fastest guy on the field, right? And then, but then now, so now you look, and now they have a tight end as well. So now all of a sudden you're shooting safeties, and they're getting wide over the number one receivers. So, you know, and I said the number one receivers, the furthest guys on the outside. And now all of a sudden the middle of the field is wide open, and you have a guy like Chung or whoever, a linebacker, on a guy like Kelsey, right? So it's definitely, you know, you have to sprinkle it in, and I could probably get into it. It's probably better to do a YouTube channel, because when you play cover five, right, you want to be able to play cover two and cover five essentially for the first 5 yards to look the same. Let me say that again. Cover two and cover five, cover two being a zone coverage, right, cover five being a man, the first 5 yards should essentially look the same. And that's how people get in trouble, because even in cover five coverage, there are still zone concepts, right? We can say, you know, we could trap the fly. What does that mean? Now, all of a sudden, the number two guy runs an out route, and we're playing cover five, we're playing man, but now all of a sudden the corner is sitting there. He's reading number two now, and essentially his number one that took off down the field, because most times if you get an out route by the slot receiver, the number one receiver is running a go. So now all of a sudden the safety takes him, and a corner sitting right there. So it should look the same, and it should take time. And that's why being able to rush four guys and get pressure and essentially play cover two and cover five, because now you have to drop the rest of the guys, right, in coverage. I mean, it's hard to stop.
We're going to be testing the listeners next week on all of this stuff. We're going to be talking trapping the fly. We're going to be talking topping. There's all sorts of things we need to dive into here with you.
I feel like we're getting deep. I'm not sure about our audience, right?
Have we moved into the 200? Is this the 200 level? You always talk about football 101, and you're trying to dumb it down for us. Are we now into 102 or 103?
Honestly, it's hard to get into the 200s or the 103s, you know, via podcast. I think it's more like I want to show you, you know, you have to see some of these things. And, you know, everyone learns differently, right? Everyone learns differently.
Yeah, you can only paint a picture with your words to a certain point, right? And then all of a sudden, we're starting to get confused on this end. But I'm not. I'm following. I'm learning a lot. Hey, before we let you go, you're Mr. Big Businessman, Mr. Optum, Mr. Oh, my God. You guys should have seen this guy schmoozing before the game on Sunday night.
You have to.
Ultimate schmooze mode. Can I make you the Patriots GM right now? I'm going to do it, whether you like it or not. You're now Patriots GM. We're a week away from the trade deadline. Trade deadline is Halloween this year.
Yeah.
What are you doing for the Patriots to make this team better? We know the Patriots like to trade. You've seen it. You've been on teams where they've made big trades in the middle of the year. What would you do?
Yeah, I think I'm, you know, for me, and, you know, call me a homer, call me a defensive guy, I'm going to get someone who can rush the passer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get someone that I know can beat this guy one-on-one. I might be calling Rob Ninkovich like, hey, man, give me a deal here. Give me a deal, Ninkovich. honestly, because the thing about it, when you lose a guy like Rivers, who, you know, they had high hopes for this guy, and unfortunately he tore his ACL, you kind of missed out on having a guy like that. Right now, when you get past the first four defensive linemen, like, who do you really bring in as your closer, right? You know, it is World Series time. Who do you bring in to close the game out? Who is that Dwight Freeney-esque or Von Miller-esque type of guy that you bring in to close the game out? You look at the game 2 games ago against the Jets. I think it was like 3rd-and-18, 3rd-and-17. It was late in the game. And MVP's sitting there like, you know what? He caught a corner blitz. And when you look at that corner blitz, it's kind of like, you know, Matty P is kind of like, you know, we need to figure out how – you know, we had to X and O these guys. We had to figure out how can we get to these guys a different way.
Right.
So I will go after a defensive end.
Defensive end, I like it. Maybe Rob Ninkovich, who is at, I believe he's at the 270 range I saw on his Instagram the other day. So I think that's right around playing weight for him. He should be able to set an edge there.
You're an Instagram stalker. Instagram stalker.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm just trying to keep up. Just trying to keep up. That's what all the kids are doing. We got to get, you know,
just watch football, man. Just watch sport.
No, you got to be able to communicate with the people. You know that. You say it every week on Quickslants. You're the social media guy.
Did you watch the Bernie Sanders Ted Cruz debate last week?
No, I did not.
You did. They diversified, man. Come on, man. You can't just sit there and watch can't just sit there and watch people's Instagram.
I'm either on Instagram stories or I'm all 22. That's all it is right now for me.
There you go.
No debates. The occasional book. All right, let's let you go.
Be a Renaissance man.
I'm a Renaissance man. We'll talk cooking next episode. How about that? You and me.
Perfect.
Done.
Perfect.
All right, buddy. Thanks for hitting us up. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you. Bye.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.